John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, you know, covering this sport now for over four decades, you see some weird things. And, of course, this is maybe one of the weirdest openings of training camp we've ever seen. Not surprising that obviously the pandemic has caused a lot of different change. But, man, there are a lot of players opting out for this year and going into next year. And the trend seems to be big bodies and players who have wives that are having babies, maybe their first baby. I mean, we just see Marquise Goodwin, who was traded from San Francisco to Philadelphia. He opted out. Star Lutulelei. Six members of the New England Patriots, including four starters, all have opted out. Dont'a Hightower being the Pro Bowl guy from that group doing it. Patrick Chung, he's now opted out. I mean, it's amazing to see the number of players who have opted out, along with the fact that we're getting more of the positive tests being registered. And, of course, that group is going to be well over 100. In fact, I know the Players Association say there was 102 coming into the training camp. And, there's 21 as of yesterday, and we'll get a whole list today. But let's get into it because a lot of stuff going. Let's get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
I would think he'd probably say the NFL would probably be cautious letting them, letting them play, because it could come out at the end of the day, that the prosecutors drop it and say they all made it up. So I think they wouldn't want to jump the gun on that. In this case, I'm not sure the convicted felons that are alleging this stuff are fake to the best sympathetic system.
That's David Ovalle from the Miami Herald, who has been so good in, really kind of putting this all in perspective. And, of course, what we're talking about is Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker, cornerback from the New York Giants, placed on the commissioner's exempt list. And, I was still a little surprised because, again, there, as David has said, there hasn't been a trial in Broward County and Miami-Dade since March. And right now, what you're looking at as far as Dunbar and Baker, they're not going to get a chance to go to trial for a year and a half to 2 years. So now the question is, how long can both players stay on the exempt list? No determination on that. So that's what you're wondering about. And so you wonder now what the players are able to do is go in there and attend meetings after they pass their tests. And, they can, be in Zoom and all that stuff, but they can be in the building. They just can't practice. And right now their status is uncertain until they do it. We've seen this in the exempt list, and I'm kind of wondering, is this going to be maybe a 6-game max, or if they find out that maybe charges can be dropped? Because I think you can see, as crazy as this story is and as serious as this story is, the fact that you have accusations of armed robbery, 8 charges against Baker, 4 charges of robbery on Dunbar, and then the allegation that maybe the attorney for Dunbar paid off $55,000 to the victims to change their story. It's serious, but again, where's that going to be? As David has always reported, there's been thousands of guys right now that are in prison waiting trial. That's not going to happen because he doesn't anticipate there's going to be a trial the rest of the year. So that's, of course, one story there. Of course, you have the Jamal Adams trade. Seahawks are now down to 80 players on the roster. I guess you could say technically now it's 79, because we'll get into that with the next story.
Number two.
It underscores a lot of the, I think, things that guys are considering, what their family is going through right now, their personal history. And for so many of these guys, I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of all this stuff. And so you're going to see names that pop up that probably surprise you over the next week. Because remember, they signed on Monday that deal and agreement, and players had a week to declare if they were going to opt out for the season. So we're barely halfway through the week, and we've already had this many announcements. I'm sure there are guys that are still kind of working through a lot of their decision making.
And, of course, the players have until August the 1st to make the decision if they're going to opt out or not. And, you're getting more players that have opted out. And, of course, the one we're talking about for Seattle is Chance Warmack. And I know that seems to be, pretty much the trend right now, is that you're getting a lot of big players, because I think what they're worried about, their bodies can get the virus. You got offensive lineman, defensive lineman, Andre Smith, former first-round pick offensive lineman from Baltimore. He's opted out. And, again, we mentioned the New England Patriots. Patriots, but it's a staggering number right now that's going, and I don't know how many ultimately it's going to be, but it's certainly a growing list. I think we're probably up to about 17 or 18 right now, and so Warmack hasn't really played since 2018 because he took the 2019 season off, and you can kind of understand that family rules on this. And you've got the chance now. You don't want to bring the virus, and it's like it's not off it. And the way it works is that the player without risk is able to get $150,000 opt out, and then the player with risk, like Mark Collins, Cannon of the New England Patriots, starting right tackle, he has histories for, so he gets $350,000. We're going to talk to Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network, who joins us to talk about reporting day and the Jamal Adams trade. That's going to be at 10:30.
Number three.
Really, the simple thought, how could we ever get a player of this magnitude on our team? We've been drafted, in the low 20s and the, 30s or something forever, and that pick has never allowed us that kind of opportunity. So if we were in the draft and we're sitting there in, on draft day and we see a guy up there on the board that we covet and we got to do whatever we can to get him, then what would it take to get up there? And, he was picked sixth or fifth or whatever the heck it was, We'd probably take a number one. It'd probably take something else. Shoot, we can get this guy to play on our team right now.
And so Pete Carroll talking about getting maybe make the argument, a beginning of a Hall of Fame career in Jamal Adams, best safety in football, and a transitional type player in the fact that he can make plays all around, six sacks and all that stuff, and really a player that they're not going to have a chance to get in the sixth pick because they're always going to be drafting down low in the 21 to 32 range if they're a playoff team. So Pete sounds very excited about this move. And again, we're talking about it with Bucky Brooks at 10:30. But, right now, the secondary, I think, is pretty good. I'd say right now, with two Pro Bowlers like Griffin and Adams, a budding Pro Bowler and DeAndre Diggs. I mean, you're talking about, and of course, Trey Flowers, I think, can do the job. If they get Dunbar, it'll be even better. But it's certainly a great secondary, and it's that much better with Adams.
Number four.
It's been said that one team with an outbreak such as this is baseball's worst nightmare. Is that the way you look at this situation?
I don't put this in the nightmare category. I mean, obviously, we don't want any player to get exposed. It's not a positive thing, but I don't see it as a nightmare. We built the protocols to allow us to continue to play. That's why we have the expanded rosters. That's why we have the pool of additional players. And we think we can keep people safe and continue to play.
Well, that's Rob Manfred, and I think he's got his head in the sand here because, again, how serious is this? Four more players for the Marlins have tested positive, so now they have 14 players, 17 total people in the organization that have tested positive, and now the Washington National players who have to go down to Miami over the weekend have voted not to go. And we'll see how that goes. Baltimore has canceled its game tonight against the Marlins. Yankees and Phillies, they've canceled their game because, of course, they were in Philadelphia, and so that's not good. And what's so crazy is that Manfred is letting the teams decide, and as it turns out, the shortstop, experienced shortstop for the Marlins, they asked him about playing after they found out they had three positive tests, and he says, let's play, and now you've spread that virus all through the National League and in the American League. It's just terrible. So I think the protocols have to be tougher and better. Manfred's failed on this one.
Number five.
Now fires. Swing socked way deep out to left field. Evan White touch the ball for the first time in the show. Your first big league home run comes in the third inning in Houston, Texas. He has extended the lead for the Mariners. Evan White off to a hot start. What a beginning to his career. 3-0 Mariners.
So these games have been pretty predictable, I guess, in some sense. That what happens is Mariners might get off to a good start like they did yesterday, Evan White getting the home run, and all of a sudden, they're leading the Astros 3-0. And then you get to the fourth and the fifth inning, and they start to churn and lose runs and give up runs to the other team and then start to trail. So Mariners lose last night, and so they lost 3 out of 4 to the Astros, which, of course, is better than the 18 of 19 that they lost last year. But, overall, we know that the Astros are the much better team. What ended up happening in the bottom of the fourth or so, the Astros started coming on like they have. Now, Justin Sheffield's going to make his first start in 2020. That's going to be coming up because the Mariners are taking on the Angels in Anaheim tonight. You'll be able to hear the pregame at 5:30. First pitch is going to be at 6:40 on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. So coming up next, we're going to go under further review and talk about, are the Seahawks done making moves? I kind of get the feeling they're not. We'll check that out next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, under further review, of course, now we've seen the big move by Jamal Adams, the trade that really kind of perked things up, and you know they're feeling real good about that. Now the next thing is going to be, is there going to be any more moves? And you know there's going to be, particularly, you know, they make the move on acquiring Jamal Adams. Certainly it was a big price, 2 firsts, a third, Bradley McDougal, and they get a fourth rounder back in 2012. But, you know, sure enough, you know, right before the start of camp, they let Brandon Jackson go. He had a $2.133 million salary. You know, they let Joey Hunt go. He had the same thing. And so now you get the idea. It's like, okay, they've got $17 million of cap room. If they're clearing cap, they're probably interested in doing something else. You know that they'd like to get a run-stopping defensive tackle. And we do have one update, you know, on Damon Harrison. You know, Damon Harrison, of course, is a big consideration for this team. But the problem is that he's not sure as one of the big guys, like we're seeing with all the big defensive tackles and big offensive linemen, that he wants to play this year because of the COVID. And so that's going to be a big question. You know that they're still interested in getting Jadeveon Clowney. And of course, you know, they can still do that if he comes off the price that he wants, which right now doesn't match what anybody in the league wants to pay him. You know, so that's still up in the air. And then, I know there's conversations about maybe getting an Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, if he comes up. You know, what more things can they do? Let's go ask Jake Heaps what he thinks.
Is trading for Jamal Adams the last big move of the Seahawks offseason?
Curtis, this is not the last move for the Seahawks, and particularly on defense. I am fully confident that when Josh Gordon gets reinstated into the league, that he will become a Seahawk. I feel confident in that. Josh Gordon wants to be a Seahawk, and I think the Seahawks feel very good about him in terms of what he would do against the cap, in the sense that he would not cost much. He would be a veteran minimum player, and they have great familiarity with him. So I think that that makes a lot of sense as a late signed addition. But more importantly to the defense, they're not done adding. I firmly believe that they're going to add to this defensive line. The question is where? Is it with another edge rusher with Jadeveon Clowney, Everson Griffin? Or do they look at some of these veteran defensive tackles that are out there still left in the market, like Snacks Harrison, Mike Daniels and Tim Jernigan? Those are three really good defensive tackles. Oh, and Marcell Dareus for that matter as well. So those are four defensive tackles that could really help you in terms of run stuffing ability. And I think would really round out this defensive line pretty nicely. So expect a move on that defensive line either during training camp or as they get approached the season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That there's a good chance that they're going to get something done because they're in that's go for it mode, and that's what John Snyder's doing. He's going for it right now, and so the strategy is okay. What can you get, and what can you get? And again, part of the problem right now is that you still don't know what players are opting out and what are not, and you know, are they going to pass the COVID test or not? But no, I don't think the Seahawks are done. And really, you know, the fact that you know they didn't bring the $4.266 million with Hunt, and also with what they did with Brandon Jackson, you still kind of wonder, okay, with the question marks on Dunbar, not knowing when he could be available, do they make a move on another cornerback? Not necessarily a starter, but somebody that can be, you know, right behind Trey Flowers, you know, because again, they're in good shape there. But that's the one thing. I mean, you look at the Seahawks in so many positions, they're in good shape. You know, you still have questions about, you know, the pass rush, but it is better than last year. You still have questions now at cornerback if Dunbar is not going to be there. But, you know, you had the safety position, which was pretty strong, you know, with the two-time Pro Bowl alternate in Quentin Dunbar, you know, Pro Bowl alternate 2 years ago in McDougal, and then also with what you have with Marquise Blair. I mean, that seemed to be good, but now you get a top safety who can be positionless and do all these different things. You can see how that move tended to work out. So overall, I think it's going to be interesting, Curtis, to see, you know, what type of move. I mean, because, you know, you still, and of course, I mean, teams are being caught off guard right now. And again, you wonder about, you know, Bill Belichick, and, you know, here he cuts 10 players to get to 80, and the next thing you know, he's got six players, including four starters, that decided to opt out for the season. So in some ways, I mean, you may not know what you might be missing. I mean, right now, the Seahawks are down three offensive linemen from the weekend, and, you know, letting Hunt go, and, you know, letting Jordan Roos, who was claimed by the Las Vegas Raiders, and then, you know, with the opt-out for Chance Warmack. So where do you think they might go, pending on what might happen today?
Yeah, I think defensive line probably is still the number one need for the Seahawks. And depending on, you know, you look at the sort of the physical stature of a lot of these players that are choosing to opt out, John, you mentioned they're big guys. They're the big, big guys down in the trenches. And the Seahawks are already thin at defensive line. And if any of those guys choose to opt out, which they rightfully can, it is their choice. It's absolutely their choice. You know, that leaves the Seahawks even more vulnerable at that position. So maybe they're able to find somebody on the free agent market. You know, Jake mentioned Marcell Dareus and Snacks Harrison, those two guys, you know, big run stuffers that the Seahawks really need because they don't have Al Woods anymore. That pass rushing spot, you know, Jadeveon Clowney obviously wants to play. If he didn't want to play, then, you know, I don't think he would be clamoring for teams to sign him the way he has on social media the last couple of days. But I look at the Seahawks right now, John, and I think it is imperative that they shore up that defensive line. And who knows, if players choose to withdraw here in the next couple of days, then the focus of what the Seahawks need becomes even more clear.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And so that is going to be the challenge as far as, you know, just trying to do it. And, of course, again, you don't know if you're going to get a curveball in the sense that, you know, I'm sure that Buffalo didn't think that star Lutolini was going to miss the season. And I'm sure that now in Philadelphia, you have to be concerned about the wide receiving corps because they tried to pick up the speed of Marquise Goodwin, and next thing you know, what happens is that you know, he decides to opt out, and so, you know, and they had revised his contract, and all these deals would go to next year. So yeah, so in the end, it's like it's going to be a fascinating couple of days here and a fascinating day today. I mean, you saw that it's been interesting all the way through here, you know, with what was happening on Friday, actually the last two Fridays, in getting some things done as far as getting the protocols and, you know, getting the cap figured out for next year. And, you know, where Seattle's in such good shape is that they only have a couple players, three or four, that you know, you wonder about re-signing, you know, particularly either, you know, Chris Carson and Shaquille Griffin, and we'll see about Dunbar. They're the main guys, and then you look at a team like the 49ers, and they have 29 free agents, including their starting three top three cornerbacks, George Kittle, who is going to report, and a lot of things that are going to be tight against a cap that's not in their benefit. So it's a fascinating time right now, a lot of time to churn and, you know, kind of see what surprises happen, and we're getting a lot of surprises right now with the guys that are opting out, so stay tuned on that front. And of course, I don't know, Curtis, it's going to be it's very interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely interesting. And John, we're getting a couple of texts to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. They're wondering, John, once these players opt out, does their salary count against the 2020 cap?
No, here's what happens. It's like in the case of Chance Warmack, who was on a minimum contract at 910, which was a 750 cap, he'll get $150,000 kind of an advance, right? And that'll count against the cap. And then if he had a signing bonus, anybody with a signing bonus, that counts in this year's cap, but then the contract tolls to next year. And so, you know, if, and then of course, if he plays next year, then he has to pay back the 100 and, or he can keep the 150, but that'll all go against the cap next year or come off the cap next year. So in the end, is like the cap numbers go down with anybody that opts out this year, but then that creates a bigger problem for teams next year if a guy has a big salary, because you have so many teams that are over the cap. Like over half the league right now is over the cap, and a lot of teams aren't going to be able to operate. And it's going to major change in the NFC in the sense that teams like New Orleans, Atlanta, maybe Green Bay, certainly Philadelphia, may have to take so much dead money to clear cap room that they may not be playoff teams next year. So we'll have all that talk coming up. And in the meantime, we're going to come back, and you can be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. We're coming back. We're going to go and talk to Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's reporting day in the National Football League, where 30 of the 32 teams start to bring everybody in, get their tests going as far as the COVID-19, and then start to figure out how many opt-outs there are, how many changes, and trying to at least get into all of this. We're talking to Bucky Brooks from the NFL Network, and he hosts the Move the Sticks podcast along with Daniel Jeremiah. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Bucky Brooks, at Bucky Brooks. And, Bucky, I guess we start off with the big news over the weekend. The Seahawks make the trade for Jamal Adams, pretty pricey, with two first-rounders, a third, and Bradley McDougal. They get a fourth back in 2022. First off, was that an overprice, or do you think that they're just going for it?
Well, I think Jamal Adams is a great player. I think he's an elite player, and the all-pro designation by his name matches his play. You're talking about a player who is really historically great at what he does at the position. He and J.J. Watt are the only players with 200-plus tackles, 10-plus sacks, and 25 passing defense in their first three seasons. So you're talking about an all-time great player. And I think for the Seattle Seahawks, having the opportunity to get what we call a blue-chip player, I think is well worth it, particularly when you think about the value of that position in that defense and really how the defense defines how the team plays. I think when you're John Snyder and you're Pete Carroll, I think there is something to taking a proven commodity versus what could be down the road with draft pick.
Yeah, nobody better than you to diagnose this, but there seems to be a change in football that's now put new value and additional value on safeties. And in fact, I know that Matt Rhule talked about coming into the league, and in college you have the positionist player, which, of course, in the case of Adams, he can play linebacker, he can play safety, he can go into slot and cover. As you mentioned, he can rush the quarterback, force fumbles, do all those different things. How's the game changed that has created more value for the guys like Minka Fitzpatrick and also guys like Jamal Adams?
Yeah, John, I think you're really on to something. I think it's great that Matt Rhule brought that up when he was coming from the college game, because the college game has filtered into the pro game now more than ever. To combat the spread offenses in college, what you had to do is have these hybrid players that were half linebacker, half safety, that could come down in the box and do all the stuff in the run game, go outside and match up with a slot receiver, but also make open field tackles versus these athletic quarterbacks. Well, in the pro game, as we see more of the Lamar Jacksons and Kyler Murrays and those guys have success in the league, you have to have chess pieces that can match that. The safety is a position that can match that athletic quarterback. And it was telling a few weeks ago, I had an opportunity to talk to Bill Polian, and Bill Polian talked about building an elite defense. He talked about the two pass rushers. He talked about a linebacker. But then instead of cornerback, he said safety, strong safety, free safety. And he said the box safety will become one of the more important pieces of a championship puzzle, because you have to be able to tackle these quarterbacks in space while also dealing with the tight end and factoring in against the running game. I think the Jamal Adams trade is an illustration of how the game is trending towards the safety reemerging as a pivotal piece of the championship defensive puzzle.
Well, you watched it last year when the Steelers gave up a first-round pick for Minka Fitzpatrick, and he played at a defensive player of the year level, and you look at how their defensive numbers increased and got better as his season went on and the more he got integrated into that defense.
Yeah, I think there's a myth when it comes to safeties that safeties aren't marquee positions. I know in the team building process, particularly coming from a scouting background. We've always talked about quarterbacks, offensive tackles, pass rushers, and cornerbacks being kind of like the four they get paid. And the compensation reflects that. However, I do believe as the game continues to evolve and emerge, the safety position is a very critical position when it comes to building a championship defense. And when I look at Jamal Adams and I look at Minkah Fitzpatrick and Derwin James and Honey Badger and those guys, you're right about the trend of the positionless player and how that safety that can come down in the box and be a factor against the run game, cover a tight end, cover a slot receiver, blitz off the edge, there's so much value to that, especially if the defensive coordinator has the creativity to be able to utilize it, I think is key. And I think in Seattle in particular, there are a couple things that factor in. And I'm going to go back to my time with John Snyder. First, when I was a player in Green Bay and he was an assistant, Ron Wolf was the general manager. He always liked to have stars. Our defensive coordinator, Fritz Schirmer, really created the first hybrid safety playmaker in Leroy Butler. If you go back and look at the 96 season, Leroy Butler had 6.5 sacks. He had 5 interceptions. He had over 100 tackles. He was the first modern-day hybrid player. If that resonates with John Snyder based on how we went to the Super Bowl with that team, and then you fast forward to how the Seattle Seahawks at their best in the Legion of Boom heyday with Cam Chancellor playing that enforcer role, that defense has not been the same since you removed Cam Chancellor out of the lineup. Jamal Adams gives them a player that can do some of those things.
The mission in making this trade was obviously to try to catch the San Francisco 49ers, who won 13 games, loaded with talent, particularly on defense. How much closer does Jamal Adams go as far as putting Seattle on the level playing field with the 49ers?
Well, I mean, I think it's really close because I think the people that are saying that it doesn't bring them closer didn't pay attention. The Seattle Seahawks were an inch away from winning the division and having home field. If the Seahawks get home field, who's to say that they don't go to the Super Bowl? That's how close they are. The reason why this is important is because of when you're looking at the San Francisco 49ers, there are two things that come to mind when it comes to defending that offense. It's the running game and George Kittle. When Jamal Adams gives them a factor against the running game, and he may give them a piece to match up better against George Kittle. So for me, I think it's a smart acquisition. And I also think when you go back and look at the recent draft history when it comes to first-round picks, Jamal Adams is better than any draft pick that they could get in the next couple of years.
They traded for Quentin Dunbar, gave up a fifth-round pick, and now he goes on the commissioner exempt list. what do you think happens there? I don't even know how long you can have a player on the exempt list, particularly a player like he and DeAndre Baker, when there's no trials in Miami. It hasn't been one since March, and there's probably not going to be any the rest of the year because of the virus. They're talking about it's going to take a year and a half to 2 years for Dunbar to have his hearing in court. How long do you think that goes on the exempt list, and what happens?
You know, it's tough because, like, you have so many things that are coming out there. Like, the rumor mill has been spewing out all kinds of stuff, and I think it's wise for the National Football League to kind of put a pause on both of their careers, Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker, enable them to really focus on getting their case done. But you can't keep them in purgatory forever. At some point, you have to plan for getting them off the commissioner's exempt list, and I think a lot of it will be dependent upon the case that Dunbar can present, not only in court, but what he can tell the commissioner when it comes time to have that one-on-one meeting. I think that is going to be the ultimate deciding point. If the commissioner believes that the league won't have egg on their face, if they enable both of those guys to participate and play this season.
As expected, we've had opt-outs for players that are worried about coming in with the virus or for whatever reason. There's been, about 15 or 16, at least from the early morning part of it, that have opted out. But the amazing part, now we have 6 members of the New England Patriots, 3 of them starters. I mean, Patrick Chung just put in for an opt-out, Dont'a Hightower for an opt-out, Mark Cannon, the right tackle. I mean, 6 players on a team right now that was the second or third most changed team in football.
Yeah, in normal instances, I would be really, really worried. I would be really concerned about the turnover. But the one thing that we know about the New England Patriots is they do a better job of anybody of taking the pieces that are available to them and finding a way to make it work. I think Bill Belichick will take this training camp to really figure out what he has on both sides of the ball. and put them in the best situation to be successful. I think now with six members being gone, I think the Cam Newton acquisition becomes an even bigger part of what they want to do. I know we can talk about a quarterback competition, but if you go back and look at when Cam Newton has played at his best, he has been able to elevate squads that didn't have the perfect pieces together to success. And I think if you go back to his junior college, to Auburn, to even taking that Super Bowl team in Carolina, he has been able to do more with less. If he's healthy, I think Belichick will be able to fix the offense enough where the offense can drive it. And I still think they'll play good situational defense. I still expect the Patriots to be a factor in the end.
What do you see as far as now with the cap possibly going down as low as $175 million? Because the big thing I see is that it's going to really wreck the NFC because teams like New Orleans, Philadelphia, who's $91 million over the cap, Atlanta, maybe Green Bay, and San Francisco with 29 free agents, including George Kittle, and they're right now at the cap for next year. How's that going to impact the NFC?
You have to be smart in how you go about doing your business. You have to make some tough decisions as well. Like, as much as you would like to kick the can down the street by doing some of the restructures, I think you have to evaluate which players are really the guys that form your nucleus, the core of your team. You also are going to be dependent upon the development of your young players. And even though it's not ideal in a pandemic, to develop young players, the teams that are able to identify the young players that they can develop, the undrafted, the late-round draft pick, that they can groom for bigger roles down the line, those are going to be the teams that are going to be able to handle the reduction in the salary cap better than others.
I'll tell you what, it's a fascinating time right now. The virus has changed so many things, but it's making for some interesting decisions that have to be made both this year and next year. And I think it's going to certainly impact, you know, guys getting contract extensions this year, because very few teams, I think, can really work some things out.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, and I think that's what players have to realize. Right now is not the ideal time for a contract renegotiation in terms of big money, because the uncertainty with the pandemic has changed the salary cap structure. It has also changed the free flow of cash that ownership may want to exchange to players. And so it is one of those situations where you may see more short-term deals. You may see players, if they have an opportunity to grasp some security, even at a less than market rate, you may see some of those things come to fruition. It will be interesting to see compensation going to players, but also how team builders like to build their team, knowing that they're going to be really, really tight against the cap.
Great stuff from Bucky Brooks. And, of course, you can see him as a host on Move the Sticks podcast, which, along with Daniel Jeremiah, you can also follow him at Bucky Brooks. That's at Bucky Brooks. Hey, Bucky, thanks so much, as always, for being with us.
Hey, thanks so much, John.
Okay, hey, also just make sure you can tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up on a busy day with reporting day in the National Football League, we'll go and catch you up to date behind the lines and get what's going on. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, of course, I mean, this has been one of the strangest reporting days I can ever remember in the National Football League. Of course, this is the strangest year that anybody's ever experienced, at least in our lifetime, trying to go through the pandemic and all these different things. And, of course, one of the big stories today is the guys who are opting out. And, of course, we saw yesterday that, Chance Warmack decided to opt out and not take his $910,000 salary and try to do that. So he's out of it. And of course, you can also see that others are doing it too. Hey, by my count right now, there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 players who have opted out. The big ones, of course, Minnesota's in trouble. Remember, they lost five players on defense, including starters on defense, including their top three cornerbacks. And then, they cut Linville Joseph. They didn't bring back Everson Griffin. And, so at defensive tackle, they paid $9 million a year for Michael Pierce. Well, guess what? He opted out. And so that $9 million a year salary, it now has to be pushed toward next year. And that could be a problem. But, that was quite interesting. Then, of course, the New England Patriots. Patriots get absolutely ravaged. You know, they lose their Pro Bowl linebacker, Dont'a Hightower, and so now they're down three starting linebackers from last year and two others, and so that's not good. Marcus Cannon, who is the right tackle, he opted out, and he actually, because he has some history, he gets the $350,000 as a at least a stipend to get through the year. And then, they lose Patrick Chung at safety. He opted out. Backup running back Brandon Bolden opted out. And they got James Devlin retiring. And so what they ended up doing is going out to Green Bay and getting Dan Vitale as a fullback, and he opted out. So you have all these opt-outs right now, six, and they had another guy, Najee Torin, who is a backup offensive lineman, opting out. So they had cut their roster the other day to 80, and now they're down to 76. And it's like, okay, so what are they going to do? So I tell you what, Curtis, I mean, this one is just so strange.
It is strange, and, you know, I don't think they're going to be the only team that sees a wave of opt-outs the way they have. They still have a couple more days to make their decisions known, whether or not players are going to play this year. We saw Donovan Smith, left tackle for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Jeremy Fowler, who was on with us yesterday, reporting that he expects Donovan Smith to report to camp. I know he had been pretty vocal about whether or not he was going to show up this season. So that's somebody who's going to come back and play. An interesting story to watch would be with Steelers running back James Conner, who before he was in the NFL had a long battle with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which would definitely put him in the at-risk category. It appears as though he's going to play, but it looks as like Pittsburgh, as a precaution, signed Wendell Smallwood today, a veteran running back, and Pittsburgh now has seven running backs on their roster. Just another situation worth monitoring.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, because I know that Connor, because they ask him and he says he is going to report. But again, I guess you have to be cautious about this because there's so many things you simply just don't know and you got to try to find out. And so, that brings some uncertainty to things. But in the end, it's like, okay, how are you going to do this? Because, it's a very troubling time right now. And, it's like, you hope that some of these teams know what's going on and had to tip that this was going to happen, because if not, then they're caught cold.
John, do you think any opt-outs could have an impact on, I guess, the market for guys like Jadeveon Clowney? Let's say a pass rusher opts out. Would a team that we have not, really factored into his negotiations, could they kind of swoop in last minute and maybe make an offer for Jadeveon Clowney if the dollars make sense to Clowney? And is that a possibility we could see?
It is. I mean, that's why some people were wondering if New England would be willing to do that. I don't know if they would, but, it's got to be a consideration if you're the Patriots to try to consider something like that, because, now you're down so many players. I mean, you can put him at defensive end, and although the difference is that New England's not a team that likes to pay, with Bill Belichick, defensive ends. And so whatever number that we have for Clowney, my guess is that Bill wouldn't do that, because that's just not his nature. I mean, he'd rather build from the back as opposed to the front. I mean, remember, he let Chandler Jones go. He didn't let Trey Flowers walk in free agency. And so, that could be one that you might have to pass on. But, it's a fascinating thing to see. But, yeah, I mean, that's because, if you're now Minnesota, I mean, really one of the few guys that you brought in was Michael Pierce, and now you're going to be scrambling for a defensive tackle. And so, it's opened up the doors for the markets. But then you also don't know, like in the case of what's going on with Damon Snacks Harrison, I mean, you can reach out for a guy, but he may take the ability just to opt out himself and not play. I mean, Michael Bennett, decided not to play. We've seen others now, and there's going to be other guys on the street that may not just want to do anything.
John, yesterday the NFLPA, they officially appealed the NFL's decision to place DeAndre Baker on the commissioner's exempt list. That's according to Ralph Vacciano of SNY over in New York. Do you think the NFLPA would do the same for Quentin Dunbar? And how does that appeal process work? Would players be allowed to participate as long as the case is being appealed?
Not really. I mean, I think you have to get it overturned to be able to do it, but it depends on how you've kind of constructed the grievance and all that stuff. Because I agree. It's like, because I thought maybe they would let him play and let them both play, because again, their trials, as you know from David Valley, that it's going to take them until a year and a half to 2 years before they can get into a trial, and that's just way too long. And so it's like, okay, are you going to just end their career on a charge like that? It's a serious charge. There's no doubt about it. But do you have anything to back it up to, make it go right? And that's I think, the big question.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's weird how those guys, even though they've been arrested, haven't been formally charged with the stuff that they are alleged to have committed. I think, was it the 8 charges for DeAndre Baker and the 4 for Quentin Dunbar? If it does go to trial, obviously those would become formal charges. I believe the NFLPA and DeAndre Baker, their argument in this case is the fact that he hasn't been charged with anything yet, which should make him eligible to play in the 2020 season. I would imagine Quentin Dunbar has that same sort of defense lined up if they do appeal on his behalf too.
Yeah, agreed. So stay tuned. It's going to be, hey, by the way, now we look at the Miami Marlins. Their season at least has temporarily been paused, and now the team doesn't know when it's going to be able to start to get guys back and be able to play. Very, very strange. Well, coming up, Jake Heaps weeks ago brought out that the Seahawks were very much involved by Jamal Adams, and of course, he was 100% right. So we're going to talk to him next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.